And then we start the podcast.
That sounds,
I mean, that's good.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Chloe. I guess we're doing it right now. Stuck like a man.
I don't know which one I liked more.
Just layer them all on top of each other.
Do two more, and then we could just have some really good harmonies going on.
Yeah.
Harmony, that was the first note I took on the Canals chapter.
Ooh. Transition.
It was a note that I took later, about three quarters of the way through the chapter, and I copied it and went and pasted it at the very top, so apparently it was important. Hi, everyone. This is Game of Bones. Thank you for joining us today. Tonight.
Whenever it is you're listening.
Maybe you're on your way to work in a car. We've got a friend with us this evening. Her name is Chloe.
Hi.
Yay.
Chloe is our great friend from the Asawaf, or is it Asawaf? I've heard it two ways tonight, community.
It can go either way.
Okay. I met Chloe during Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia, and was privileged enough to join the taping of Drunk Asawaf History, where Ashea from History of Westeros was your esteemed guest, and that afternoon was pretty intense.
Oh my gosh, it was so fun. If I remember, you were our bartender. If I remember.
I was bestowed the honor of tending bar.
And you did it, dang it. You tended.
I did it, and I think it worked. If those of you listening, if you've seen the early Drunk History stuff on YouTube, and I know that it became a television series later, but if you've seen those, Chloe's basically taken the idea and turned it toward the more interesting historical elements from the A Song of Ice and Fire series, where folks around the community, friends of hers from different conventions and from like what we're doing right now, podcasting and meeting each other online, get really drunk and then talk about obscure bits of George R. R. Martin's history that we don't quite understand.
It's such a great idea. It's such a great idea.
I try to explain it the best I could. Is that pretty much what you guys do?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We've been kind of focusing in general. We have a couple different series. We've been doing there's a What You Thinking About series, which is where I just invite random people on and we both like just prattle about whatever's been on our mind in Game of Thrones and Song of Ice and Fire and just get drunk. Basically, I just said one day I'm really good at getting drunk and I'm really good at talking about A Song of Ice and Fire and Game of Thrones, so why not just do that with people I like?
Well, thanks for joining us tonight. We've got two pretty huge chapters to talk about, and judging by your history in the community, which we'll get to, you're like the perfect guest
have
on this evening. Hannah and I were talking earlier how we're very intimidated. Very, very intimidated.
Oh, no. But I'm mostly excited.
Gray mist has surrounded me most of this day. She's watching over me.
We have lots of questions. It's going to be good.
I'm ready. I like got real relaxed this week, took some notes even, got into the chapters again for the first time in a while, and I am ready.
I heard you chose a few owns.
Oh, yeah.
That's not so bad.
Oh, yeah. I've got like 4 to 5 owns. These chapters are full of owns.
Well, you'll fit right in.
Yes.
Also, just at the top of the show, I feel like it's important to note that Chloe's Twitter username is Lies and Arbor, correct?
Yes.
But the display name is Queen of Love and Booty.
Uh-huh.
It's literally so good.
Thank you.
Every one of us wishes we thought of that themselves.
And I've seen that you have a Lyanna Stark cosplay that you break out for that actual costume. So that isn't just a username. You actually follow through with the whole idea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. I love costuming, and that was fun to make. Plus, every girl wants a blue flower crown. Come on.
What'd you think about these two chapters?
Oh, man. Such a weighted question. These two chapters are unbelievably good. And that's the end of the podcast. Both of these chapters are so good. This first Cat of the Canals chapter is such like a day in the life and such a deep dive into what it's like to just be in Braavos, which I thought was really fun and really like atmospheric and all that. And then this Bran chapter, which is the last Bran chapter that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And Bran is, as we know, one of those super major important can't miss characters, and this is the last chapter that we have of his story to this point, and it is filled with an unbelievable amount of theories that we're going to barely scratch the surface, and I feel like us as readers just in general have barely scratched the surface as we've been reading and rereading this chapter over the last couple years. And so yeah, just lots of theories to dive into and like endgame stuff that I feel like we're going to be able to talk about, things that we just don't have answers to. And so two very different chapters in terms of in my mind, like questions that they raise, and not importance, because this Arya Cat of the Canals chapter is brings up a lot of really important things, but I just really feel the weight of this Bran chapter, and I'm excited to get into it.
It's looming over this conversation too. It's like, do we do the Bran chapter first?
I know.
There's a second in the order, but there's so much here.
I think it's such a good build. You got to do it Cat first, then Bran, because this is their like Jedi training montages. You got to build right? up, you know, this is what the Stark kids have been Jedi training in caves and in Braavos for.
Yeah. I love how the two come together and the different ways that they both learn. I love that we get so much of Arya clearly learning from the people of Braavos, these cues. We made a joke on Rewatch the Throne this past week where Hannah, you said something about, I mentioned the Hound and Arya's road trip, and you were like, a road trip, you know, the place the girl is learning all of her lessons, and like it was funny, but
the joke
it's happening more here. She has so much stimulus, and she spends most of her time at Ragman's Harbor, where a certain class of individuals are, and she learns the ropes there, and she eventually moves, and she's able to hoist her wares, oysters, clams, mm-hmm. and cockles in different parts of the city, even the Purple Harbor, and no one can just beat Arya Stark. I guess not Arya though.
I know, what do we call her in this chapter?
Cat.
Cat with the cats.
I'll do my best.
And all of the wonderful bits of fish that she's able to lure the cats through the alleyways with. This was such a beautiful chapter and ended in such a dark way.
Well, I mean, and is no one going to say cat, fish? Totally. Like, it's so obvious. It's like, hi, George, we get it.
I was You're waiting making for you references. To do that.
Well, her and Sansa both choose, they have mom names together. Cat, Elaine, Catelaine. Catelyn,
this is why we brought us? You on.
Well, what did you think about these two chapters?
Oh my god, I guess we could just amazing. Talk
specifically about the cat chapter.
Yeah, I mean, they're both so good. The Bran chapter is not only like rich in the magic that you come to love and want from Bran chapters, they're so gripping, but also it has a ton of lore, a ton of history just lightly laced in, and it has a really great passing of time as George kind of shows you like through the moons and just how long they've been in this cave. So it's a really rich chapter.
Two different kinds of Jedis.
Very different kinds. Very different.
Is that where you're headed? You think that one's headed toward the dark and one's headed toward the light?
I don't think so, especially since we know his dark. Gray morality. They're both pretty dark. I mean,
right.
This, like, Arya's chapter is a very subtle dark, because all of a sudden at the very end, you're like, oh, dang, that just
it's
happened.
It's literally dark.
Yeah, literally, yeah. Ha! Ha! Get it?
Chloe's also a stand-up comedian, so I'm going to be trying as many lines as I can tonight.
Which
Sorry,
one's
guys.
Land?
Yeah.
You landed so, that one. Good job.
Arya Stark killed John and Sam's brother.
I wouldn't call that his brother at this point, because he forsakened his duties from the wall. Darian forsook her. I don't, what's the conjugative? No one knows.
Forsook.
Forsook does not sound right.
Forsooken? Forsake. Yeah. Anyways, he screwed up and didn't follow his vows. He was no real brother.
I love how you don't quite understand whether or not she's actually done it near the end of this chapter, and I feel like there's this moments of confusion where she brings the boots back and you're like, okay, and then a little bit of time passes and it's like, oh, she actually killed him. And I feel like if you're not paying attention, or if you're not like really thinking about it, you can almost miss it until the very end. But then when you kind of go back and realize what's happening, I just feel like it's a really interesting way to kind of reveal that she actually killed him, because it's something that almost feels, I don't know, you're just not ready for it.
Well, it's so interesting too, because it's very linear in that Darian leaves the brothel and she sees him and he talks crap to her and she's like, you talked to the wrong person, MRF-er. And then you snap though, and like, she was just annoyed, and then you snap right back to she's back at the temple. And you, again, like Hannah said, you don't realize it. And it's interesting that it just flips like that. You don't quite realize it. And it says something to George R. R. Martin's writing style, that he can take things off the page like that and you won't realize what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he could do that anywhere. That right there tells you, you don't know what's actually going on in these pages half the time.
As if we needed more, like, less confidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah, more mystery.
To be like, yeah, put in our place anymore.
I love the air of mystery over this chapter. It's like we couldn't quite trust Arya because she wasn't fully into a character. She was sort of in this gray spot in between letting go of who she is and fulfilling the job that she has. Those nice attitude cuts where she's like, three new things. I've learned 30 new things.
Oh, yeah.
It's like we didn't quite lose Arya, but that moment with the boots, I went back. I was like, hold on a second. Did I miss something?
Yeah.
So it's like we're in this point of view chapter with her, but we're potentially getting less information than we were in that Melisandre chapter only a few episodes ago.
Well, in the first few pages, what's really interesting is you started off and the very first few pages is just Kat this, Kat that, and she's Kat. She's embodied this family life, which is also like Arya can't hide who she is. She's constantly that little girl searching for a family. So she joins Brusco's family and like goes from the morning with him and his family and goes and gets all the shellfish and comes back and then goes and sells it. But she just like kind of assimilates into this family. But literally about 3-4 pages in, you get her wolf dream and she dreams about being a wolf again. And it's the most obvious cut that tells you like, that's not, she's not fully assimilated. She's not Kat. She's Arya. She's Arya Stark.
And it's so interesting to have, because she's so far physically away from everything that she knows. And she's so, I mean, we all have this image of her head pushing her little cart through these docks, these ports, and meeting all these people and all these interesting people she's coming in contact with and the conversations she's having. And she mentions something about how she can pretty much get in anywhere. The oysters, clams, and cockles are like magic words that'll take her wherever she needs to go.
So cool.
She's very much deep assimilated into this while also in the back of her mind keep having these wolf dreams. And as much as she, and this is a huge theme with Arya that we talk about quite often, is that as much as she is trying to force herself into whatever current thing she's working towards, and at this point with the House of Black and White, she can't shake who she really is. And I feel like we kind of run into that not only with Arya and a little bit with Bran, but all the Stark kids. And so I just feel like, particularly in this chapter, it's so starkly contrasted starkly. Between where she is and where she is in her head, because there's such, even between like the House of Black and White and the streets, like such wildly different places that are so beautifully built. I really liked to kind of be jumping back and forth like that.
It's really interesting. Really interesting. Like identity as a whole, yeah, for the Starks.
It was fun to find out more about Arya through the things that she's experienced and learning about the things that she likes within those experiences. Like she likes, I love that she became a really good tourist person. Like she, when new people were arriving, she was, and they spoke Westerosi, she was like, oh yeah, I got all the information for you. This is where you need to go if you want this done. The better prostitutes are over here. And she's recommending one of her friends who buys the right amount of her oysters, clams, and cockles. And she just got the run of the situation. I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. And how she's making friends with all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's so interesting that of all of the inherent, Arya's a tomboy and she's such like a little rowdy, you know, tomboy, yada yada. She likes to sword fight, that she goes over to this foreign place. And I mean, George has said that we're going to see Arya go through puberty. I mean, she's 11. She's about to flower. She's about to become a woman. And you're going to see this happen. But she's just so Arya in these chapters, and she's hanging out with the prostitutes at the brothel, and she tells the guy, oh, you should go see Mary. You should see Marilyn. They call her Mary. And in her head, she says, you know, Mary wasn't the prettiest and her girls weren't either, but she had the biggest heart. And that's the most Arya Stark thing I've ever heard.
She loves selling wares and trade tongue with the insulting hand gestures.
Oh yeah,
hanging that's out with face. These.
She's like, I've never seen a camel
people.
Before.
Yeah,
that's pretty funny.
My favorite of all this was the courtesans and all the different things about them and their different brands. I guess the poetess and
they're so cool.
The so pirate cool. queen, all of that. I just
when
that
she's
was
talking
my favorite
about
thing.
The one that like doesn't even like show him. She won't like show a man unless she really likes him. What she looks like under the veil. I'm like, same.
Yeah.
Same.
It's just so cool and how they're famed around the world. But she's still kind of one of them buys all the oysters from Arya anyway. Like I just. That was my favorite in terms of the people that we get to meet, because it just felt like there's so much there.
They travel on their own. So everyone think of Braavos as kind of like think of Braavos sort of like Florence, Italy with all the boats, but probably more. And I'd like to just imagine, since we're imagining this fictitious place, let's just imagine it really big and epic, like the artist renditions, you know, the illustrations of A Song of Ice and Fire.
Oh,
let's
yeah.
imagine it. It's like that. It's just huge and crazy. And all that wonderful backstory that we learned in this chapter, the fact that Braavos was founded by, I guess, essentially the castaways, maybe the wrong kinds of people. And maybe those are the kinds of people that everyone listening likes to align themselves with. I don't know, but Arya seems to have a pretty good time there. And she's enjoying the place. She's learning about it. And she's saying stuff. And I totally lost my train of thought. the courtesans. Oh, yeah. But the courtesans have the best among everyone. They travel on these badass party barges through the city. And I'm seeing Braavos at night, thinking back to Sam and walking in his cloak and carrying a sword. I'm thinking of it like it's like a city that feels like a con or something crazy like that, where it's just like, who knows what's going to happen when
bustling.
It opens up at night.
We've
got these courtesans on barges, and they've got their own brands, and this one likes to have all of her silks this way, and she's the tiger queen. And like,
can I read the two paragraphs? Because I think they're that good. Okay. This is the description of them all. The courtesans of Braavos were famed across the world. Singers sang of them, goldsmiths and jewelers showered them with gifts, craftsmen begged for the honor of their custom. Merchant princes paid royal ransoms to have them on their arms at balls and feasts and mummer shows, and Braavos slew each other in their names. As she pushed her barrow along the canals, Kat would sometimes catch a glimpse of them floating by on their way to an evening with some lover. Each courtesan had her own barge and servants to pull her to the trysts. The poetess always had a book to hand. The Moonshadow wore only white and silver, and the Merlin Queen was never seen without her mermaids, four young maidens in the blush of their first flowering who held her train and did her hair. Each courtesan was more beautiful than the last. Even the veiled lady was beautiful, though only those she took as lovers ever saw her face. And then she starts talking about the pirate queen. And it says, Mary claimed the Black Pearl was the most famous courtesan of all. She's descended from the dragons, that one, the woman told Kat. The first Black Pearl was a pirate queen. A Westerosi prince took her for a lover and got a daughter from her who grew up to be a courtesan. Blah, 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 blah.
Anyway, just read more? I love it. Just read more of it.
What's best about that is that's Aegon the Unworthy. That's Aegon IV.
So there's more.
That was one of Aegon's mistresses.
Jeez.
Which is so cool. It's so cool.
Are these, do you think, real people George R. R. Martin has given a nod to, like, really cool personalities in his life?
Well, one of them is Chloe. We already know about that.
Yeah, I'm the veiled lady.
Got it.
I had a dream about George the other day, so I mean, I'm going to say it's canon. Like, I think he
confirmed it. Can we talk about the dream? Because I don't know about the dream. I'd love to talk about the dream.
Dude, I was at a hockey game in my dream, and I know it's a dream because I don't go to hockey games ever. So, I'm at a hockey game.
That's
like a
how
local.
I knew it was fake.
Yeah. I'm like, nice try. I would never leave the house.
Not that you're there with George R. R. Martin or anything.
Yeah, if George was there, I would. It was like a local game, though. And I went up to him and I talked to him about some of the essays I wrote. And he was like, I'm very impressed. And then it was all about Shara Dane. Okay.
We haven't even unpacked that beast yet.
God, we'll get there. There isn't a Shara Dane mentioned in this chapter I want to talk about, a vague one. But George is all like telling me what her actual end game was. And I was really mad because like he straight up said that she was Septa Lamore. And I was like, you're wrong, George. And I'm going to leave.
Whoa.
Do you think it was like a Blood Raven vision?
Dude, I freaking hope not.
Was there gray mist in your dream?
There was no gray mist. So it might have been real.
Really quick to everyone listening. I went and did some research on behalf of the world. I was reading the chapter. We've all seen the TV show. And we all like to pretend like we know stuff sometimes. You know what I'm saying? But I wondered what the hell is a cockle?
Okay.
All right. According to Webster, it's an edible burrowing bivalve mollusk with a strong ribbed shell. Arya could sell them anywhere and she was the best. Don't forget it.
She had the monopoly, honestly. Like you guys said, she could get in anywhere and she like starts talking about how she was the best in Pearl Harbor and she was Pearl Harbor. Wow. Purple Harbor. Well, how's that for a crossover? She was the best in the Purple Harbor, and she could sell all of the high lords and stuff. They're not lords. I forgot the exact term. I had it somewhere, but she's really good. She and she just all day slings them to everybody, slings cockles and clams to everyone. And then she goes to night classes for potions and apothecary. You know,
she's killing it out there. She's making great use of that free time.
Yeah.
So Arya is clearly very socially adept. What does that mean for her? And how does she apply these skills later?
Well, what's
interesting all of her siblings are like this.
Is, well, you say that, but it's kind of interesting because she's in this big exposition dump. She's living in this place where she's learning, like you were saying, 30 things a day. She's just learning facts from the free cities, from outside of them, hearing things from sailors, and she's gaining all this knowledge. And at the same time in the Vale, Sansa is very subtly gaining all this political aptitude. So it's like George is giving them, just subtly, just like he does with the moon in Bran's chapter to signify time passing by, he kind of makes it so he's showing these girls are learning at a very right. accelerated rate, which I think is also making up for the fact that he cut having a 5-year gap in the story. Mm-hmm. He has to scoot them along a little bit faster. So I think it's his way of saying, hey, they're gaining aptitude in these topics and their Jedi training's almost complete. Sansa's going to be political. Arya's going to be assassin-y, trained, whatever. We don't know.
Do you think that this means that other kids who are experiencing the fallout of the War of the Five Kings and so on are also experiencing an accelerated growing, and not just, for example, the ones that we're following in the story, but it's just kind of like the whole realm is coming up around all this chaos at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. Look at Edric Dayne, for example. He had his brief spot of time in Storm of Swords, and in a little bit at the very, very, very end of Clash, in terms of where he was, at least. But he kind of didn't show back up after Feast and Darkstar got introduced. So you're looking at the role of Edric Dayne, which personally I think is going to be for, you know, Lightbringer, basically, to come into play, or Dawn, or maybe they're the same thing. No one knows. But I think he was going to be the vehicle to move Dawn. And now Darkstar's appeared, and we're probably going to get a Starfall chapter in The Winds of Winter, in my opinion, with Darkstar. And I'm sure Dawn's going to get stolen or moved. So that's kind of the transition right there, that we lose Edric Dayne.
That son of a bitch. He's like, right. I deserve this sword.
I'm sure that'll go well for him, being of the night, with a sword that's not of the night.
Yeah, best of luck.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Good luck, boo-boo. Love you, Darkstar.
Do you know the age range of the kids that we've met so far, folks like Maya Stone and reaching all the way to Fagon, like where, if George has any kind of theme of development? Because I think for a lot of people, the show has kind of skewed a lot of those points of view because they look like they're in their late 20s.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're looking at around the age of like 15, 16 are characters like Mira Reed, Rob before death, Rip, love you, John, Marjorie. You know, you're looking at kind of there. Daenerys is, you know, 13, 14 at the end of Dance-ish, going on 15. Sansa is 13, claiming she's 14 because she feels older and cooler as a bastard girl.
We've all done it.
Yeah, right. I mean, we've all lied about our age at least a year. She's like
14, female King's Landing.
ESL?
Yes, yeah, ESL.
Yeah, I mean, it ranges to younger. Like, Edric Storm is, what, 11, and Shireen's 9, I want to say, maybe, on, like, Brickon. Brickon is, like, God, and Dance, he's probably 5. So Bran would be 9, I want to say, by Dance. Arya's 11. Kind of all, they're all mixed across the range of like 7 through 19. The Sand Snakes and Dorne are all older. They're all like 18 plus. Arya is 23, I want to say. 24.
It's wild to think about Bran being 9 years old.
And hooked into a tree.
Yeah. Or my poor Jojen boy. Paste at 9.
Yeah, so that three-eyed raven, not such a good guy, right?
Again, morally gray.
Yeah.
I mean, no, not really good. Not good, let's be honest.
Well, it's like that place he's at is pretty crazy, man. There's just human skulls all over the place.
Thousands.
And there's just the cavernous roots that go so deep. And everyone's like, we're the magic people from this story, and we can do pretty much anything, but we don't even go down there, man. We don't know what's down there. That's where the Falmer live. It's the abyss. That's where George R. R. Martin's writing the book.
Oh, ouch. You're fired. I don't even have that authority, but you're fired.
I meant like, because he's the great other. That would be where he lives, right?
Mm-hmm. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Nice save.
Good save.
I was serious.
Hannah and I are high-fiving through the internet.
Yeah, we are.
Sucker.
I'm excited when I saw that Theon sample chapter in your Reddit theory. Jeez, I don't want to read this. I do want to read this. I want to read it again.
You haven't read the sample chapters yet?
Not all of them, no.
You gotta.
Just a little bit.
Can't believe you're saying
that
out loud.
I did it real easy because I'm an addict.
I didn't want to get too ahead of myself.
I'm an addict, you know what I mean? So.
I want to really badly, and every time I get a little taste of it, it's like, we should probably just read what's available. George put it out for a reason, right?
I mean,
yeah, we all read them. Available you're too. The only one.
You've read them?
Yes. Are you kidding me?
I didn't know that. Which one's your favorite one?
My favorite is, I don't know, that may be for a different podcast.
They're all good.
That's the problem.
The Balticon one, though, is a fave just because there.
Valyrian
That's
armor.
A lot of people's faves.
For a good reason.
The cool thing is all of them are really lit. Like, and not to T-Wow theorize, like, this is a meta theory that everyone's all complaining because it's taking so long, you know, which George doesn't owe anyone anything, so jot that down.
Amen.
But, you privileged people. But, honestly, those chapters are so good that if he's putting this much time into all of it, it's gonna be real good, because those chapters alone were, like, knock you off your butt. Like, dang. All of them. There wasn't a single one of those that was boring to me, so if you're itching and you haven't read the sample chapters, they're so available on the internet in archives, and you should find them.
I'm going to read them.
I know. You're weak.
So I think we got a little off track. Do you want to tell us about the Dane inclusion, this chapter?
Oh, so it's a very light inclusion. most people might not notice right away, but there is, before Arya goes all assassin pants on Darren and takes his boots and dumps him into the river, which a really beautiful foreshadowing there was, she's in the brothel listening to him and he's like singing and being an a-hole, and she thinks the only black about him was his boots. Kat had heard him tell Lana that he'd thrown all the rest in a canal, and then she throws him in a canal, which is really great, without the boots. But as she's listening to him sitting there and he's playing a song and being totally the worst Night's Watch guy ever, she thinks he's a man of the Night's Watch, she thought, as he sang about some stupid lady throwing herself off some stupid tower because her stupid prince was dead. The lady should go kill the ones who killed her prince, and the singer should be on the wall. And it's a very subtle Ashara Dane jumping out of the Palestone sword tower reference.
So what does that mean for Arya?
I mean, it's really interesting because Arya is very, the first three books, Arya has this kind of moral code, being raised especially by Ned Stark and being honorable. She has this whole, either you're a good person or you're not. She has a very, wait for it, black and white mentality about things, like the House of Black and White mentality of what's good or bad. And she literally goes through life like, well, you should do this. Like, if you didn't save my mom, you're a bad person, Sandor Clegane. You know, like, she has these thoughts of what makes people good and bad. And she shows up at the House of Black and White, and it's like she gets to grapple with these kind of things. Like, oh, it's always so easy. The lady should have just killed the people who killed her prince. The singer should be on the wall. And I think it's a big learning curve for Arya that's not how things work in life. And she's learning that now as an 11-year-old. She's learning, okay, you know, I've been on the road the last 2 years and it sucked. And it turns out people aren't always good. And that sucks.
Yeah.
It's a tough lesson to learn.
Do you think the Waif knew what she did ahead of time?
I feel like yes. I feel like they seem to have eyes everywhere, you know?
They had this strange animosity toward her when she arrived, too. It was like, well, just wait till the kindly man comes and calls you out for what you did.
Yeah.
Don't you kind of feel like they slap her on the wrist a little bit, but don't really punish her?
Well, she like admits to it very matter-of-factly, almost. Right. Like, she doesn't really hide it. She knows they know. I mean, she already knows. She just feels it. And they know this whole time. They keep saying, you know, oh, you're not no one. You're Arya Stark. Arya Stark bites her lip. Arya Stark does this. Like, you're obviously not one of us. And then they slap her on the wrist when she admits it. I mean, going blind is not that big of a punishment, and it helped her. It helps her awaken her inner eye more. So
that's the thing. It's like, it's almost, you almost see it as a promotion. I mean, when you look at like the bigger picture of her journey and what she's doing, it's not as much of a punishment as, I mean, it feels so dramatic when you read it. It's like when she woke the next morning, she was blind. And that feels very dramatic. And it's a very difficult thing that she goes through, but she was going to have to do it anyway. And it's almost a progression on her journey to whatever, instead of them kicking her out, you know what I mean? Because they,
right,
they know who
of
she
her
is.
Just being on the streets, like.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you think that she impressed them when she made the kill, that she was capable of doing so much more? And they're like, "Oh, we found one."
I don't know. It's interesting because I feel like that kill is one of those moments, at least for me, when we really realize that she's never going to be no one, that she's always going to have those urges to protect and do what's right, I guess, or, you know,
yeah.
I'm tripping over all my words, but a moment for them when they realize that she also isn't ever going to really become no one, but they don't really care, You know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say? Or like,
do they have like a hidden agenda? So what if, I mean, like, are they going to use her animosity towards Darren, for example? I mean, obviously she was going to be pissed about meeting someone who wasn't doing his duty on the wall, especially when she heard that her older brother sent him and he's defying her family. So are they going to use her familial bonds like that and her animosity to make her go kill someone they need killed or something, which is weird because the faceless men cannot kill anyone they have met or seen before is their rule. So if she's not technically a faceless man, but they send her on an assassin journey maybe or something.
It's interesting. Mm. It's an interesting relationship.
Do you think it's going to look anything like the show shook out, or do you think there's going to be more complication and more stuff happening here in Braavos with the House of Black and White?
I think that the House of Black and White may be a little more expanded than what we saw, obviously, because the show is an adaptation. We have to collapse those plots so that we can barrel towards the end. But I think we'll see more from the House of Black and White. I think it'll pan out just a little more detailed in The Winds of Winter, but I do think she's going to head home. I think she's probably going to make a stop in the Riverlands on the way. I'm a firm believer that, especially because Arya, you know, she has learned a lot about what mercy, giving mercy means, and how her plot, I mean, even reading these chapters, there are so many references to her mom and so many water references and fish references that her plot is just circulating. I think she's going to be the one to have to put her mom down. I think she will have to show her mom the gift of mercy, show Mother Merciless mercy in the end. And I think that's going to be a big thing for her plot. And then she can go home. But I don't know what's going to happen endgame for her. I always am between sticking too hard on the quote that you'll be sewing all through winter, needle frozen in your hand from a Game of Thrones about her. I think that quote is super foreshadowy, but also like George's wife would murder him because that's her favorite. And Arya is one of his favorites too. So the other endgame I really wish for is that like Gendry and her, when they're older, finally get together and rule from Old Stones where Christopher the fourth or fifth ruled with his hammer. I would like that because Gendry should rule with his hammer. Yeah. And they should just be married and in love forever. And, you know, it's fine.
No big deal. So what kind of poster do you have hanging up behind you right now?
My House Dane poster. Is that what you're asking about? Is that-
Maybe.
I have a beautiful homemade poster board that has a timeline of the quote unquote deaths and births of the current through like rebellion through current House Dane members.
I wish I was as cool as you.
Same. We have our Dane special. Bring the poster with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I will. It all started because one day someone on Twitter was trying to tell me that the eldest Dane father didn't exist and that like Edric Dane was Ashara Dane's kid. And I was like, you're wrong. And you here's why you're wrong.
Place.
Yeah, exactly.
I know what a cockle is.
I'm not mad. I just want to talk about it. So here's a poster board.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
I literally drove to Walgreens and bought poster board like for that reason.
I love
got
that.
Markers. I'm dedicated.
And today's show is sponsored by RX Bar.
RX Bar is a whole food protein bar made with a few simple, clean ingredients, which all serve a purpose. Egg whites for protein, dates to bind, nuts for texture. And in the interest of full transparency, all of the core ingredients are labeled right on the front of the package. No BS.
They're perfect for breakfast on the go, a snack at the office to throw in your bag for a bike ride. They're perfect for a hike, traveling, pretty much anything. And better yet, being beyond a go-to snack that checks off a number of nutritional boxes, RX bars actually taste delicious.
With 11 delicious flavor varieties, all of which are gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, and free of any added sugar, artificial colors or flavors, preservatives or fillers, you can actually taste the cacao, the real fruit, and the spices like sea salt.
So whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors, there's an RX bar for you. And I feel like everyone listening has definitely seen these.
At the checkout aisle.
Right? I've been seeing them in airports. I've been seeing them in gas stations during cross-country drives. And I'm just happy to see this product that we talked about a couple months ago on the show start catching on like it has. And I think it kind of speaks for itself. We've been sent these bars, we tried them ourselves, and if you're looking for actual nutrition from a snack, which I think is probably the purpose of most snacks, or at least they should be, that this is just a no-brainer.
What's your favorite one?
100% chocolate sea salt.
Mine's blueberry.
So for 25% off your first order, you can visit rxbar.com/owns and enter promo code owns at checkout.
That's rxbar.com/owns, promo code O-W-N-S for 25% off your first order.
So are we ready to dive into the abyss?
Oh my God, I'm so excited to dive into the abyss.
So the abyss, the final brand chapter in A Dance of Dragons, which is the final published book that we have of A Song of Ice and Fire. I know it sounds pretty crazy, everybody, that we're so far into Game of Thrones and the end game is looming. We might have this year off from the season, but everyone kind of feels like, oh yeah, it's toward the end of the story, but there are two books left and these books are massive. And this is the last Bran Stark chapter we have. And it ends in just, I know that we've seen more of his story from the TV series, but after reading this in more detail, and maybe after this conversation, you guys might feel the same. But I just don't know if that's the end of things for Bran Stark, the way that we've seen it adapted. I think,
no.
I don't know if it has anything to do with it. I just don't know.
I really feel like the Starklings that are alive are going to get to regroup at Winterfell. I don't think Bran's fate lies inside of a weirwood tree right now. Maybe in the future, maybe he does have to return to the tree, but I think Bran will go home. There's no way that the alive Starks won't convene. I think we've seen such a downfall for our heroes, because you're introduced to the Starks when you start these books, and you feel this familial loyalty, this bond, this Stark bannerman, like the North remembers. It nothing like the King in the North, like hearing that chanted, like you can't tell me that didn't make you tear up and have a sense of like wolf
every
pride
time.
Every time. And
yeah.
I feel like we've been losing for so long. Our team has been losing. You know, the Red Wedding was the biggest, just cutting, horrible event. And it's finally time. All these arcs are converging. Arya is learning to be smart and assassiny or whatever and sneaky and fighting. And Sansa is learning politics and she's going to learn to outmaneuver and she's going to get to go home eventually. Jon's kind of dead. But, you know, I mean, that's... whatever.
That's John.
Yeah,
we'll deal with that. Out.
Great hair.
Exactly, great hair, so he'll be fine. And Bran is in a tree, but he's like learning his Jedi mind trickery, and it's like, it's finally looking good for our team.
Right.
You know, finally.
Well, and Bran doesn't even want to be here.
No.
You know, and there's so many moments in this chapter where he thinks about how this isn't really what he thought this was going to be, and this isn't really, he says something about, you know, I was going to be a knight, and he's afraid of this future that is just him in this tree by himself. And so I like the idea that he won't just be here forever and that he'll use whatever he's learning or figuring out or being taught and manipulated to do or whatever, depending on what you think, that he'll then take that and still has that, as we're talking about with Arya, that starkness inside of him that's going to drive him to want to be with his family. So I'm totally on board with that as well.
What do you think the last two books, how do you think it will pan out timing wise? Like, do you guys think it will take place over like 1 year each book, 2 years each book? Like, how do you think by the very end of the book, when all the action ceases, barring epilogue of sorts, how much time do you think is going to pass?
I think that the first book is going to be half the characters and the second book is going to be the other half.
Oh, no.
You're cruel.
Just kidding. I don't think that.
We already had that happen once and it hurt very badly. Don't hurt me like this.
So badly we tried to fix it. Just kidding.
How long is the time passing between Feast and Dance, do you know?
It's supposed to be around similar chronologically, only a few months depending on the chapter because it was the one book torn apart, so...
Right. Do you know how long, like, maybe it's a year?
Yeah, I'd say, like, a year,
we
year
should
and a
know,
half.
But because, the seasons are weird.
Well, so the first two books, I mean, Sansa turns... She's 11 in Aegot and 12 in Clash. And so then starting Storm, I think she's just turning 13 near the end of Storm-ish, somewhere around there. And then she's 13 in Feast. So she's probably going to be 15... when we start Winds of Winter, I would gather.
Maybe it'll be a year or two apiece, unless things kind of slow down toward the ends of Winds, because with Winter, there's some slowing of time. Maybe it'll be like a long period of darkness, and maybe at the very end, we'll touch back, and it'll be like, here's the final hope, this is what passed. Maybe it'll be in the epilogue, there'll have been a lot of time pass, and then by Dream of Spring, they'll be even older, and they'll bring a lot of those things that they learned in the Dark Winter to fight things in the final book, maybe.
Well, and why I ask that is because, I mean, Bran is in this cave, and as I kind of said earlier, time is passing. We see, they talk about the moon and like how long he's been there.
And we don't always see it that way.
Exactly. So it's like a very subtle, George is moving us along, and I do feel like he's trying to move as fast as he can to get us older. He needs these characters older. So if Bran is, what, 9 now, 9, 10 now, like by the end of the series, what's he going to be, 15, 16 most? So that kind of makes me wonder, as a 16-year-old man, is he going to choose to just go into the tree forever? Or is he going to do something else to like make the war stop? I don't know. Like, what's he going to do? No one knows.
Do you think the tree will be attacked like it was in the show?
I think something has to take them out of the cave because, I mean, you hear how they can't penetrate it. They talk in this chapter about how, like, oh, they can't penetrate it, but they're, like, outside the cave, like, in areas, in little gatherings outside the cave in certain areas. So I think it's being set up to happen, for sure.
There was a lot of that in this chapter when Bran was well, really when it was being set up, just the amount of dead within the tree, but also without the tree, and the animation that it had, and the fact that the ward among the tree was the only thing separating them. There's a lot to pull from there sort of thematically.
Well, even like interesting that we literally get to see what the weirwood net is consisted of. He sees the children of the forest. I mean, they say there's 3 or so score of them. So more than 60 children of the forest left, but they're all in this cave, and that he goes by this room and there's just a mass of them in trees.
God, they're creepy as hell too.
Yeah, it was so creepy.
Old, and like they only like barely one of them looked at him kind of. He thought they were just dead. So they're just these fossilized little deer persons.
So are they in charge? Are they pulling the strings behind Brennan, Bloodraven, do you think?
I don't think fully behind Bloodraven. There's a lot of really interesting, Joe Magician from Reddit and Twitter had this really cool theory a couple weeks ago that he put out about weirwoods. He worked really hard on it, and he had just some really interesting ideas and theories about what the weirwoods are, and that, like, basically the old gods were inside the trees, and that, you know, souls lived inside the trees, and these trees operate off blood and souls. So it's kind of, at the same time, the children are giving themselves to the trees. So I think they're following an agenda. And I think Brendan is following some sort of agenda of visions he's seen.
So they're all sort of tapping from the same raw source, but they're doing it in different ways. And maybe the children are more adept because they've been around longer.
Yeah, I think so. I think
so. Do you think that they activated the trees actually by carving the faces, or that's just kind of a folklore telling of how the technology works?
I think that's kind of a folklore, and I think it dials deeper than that even. The roots go deeper, if I may.
Yes.
Finger guns. But I think, like, also, because, I mean, how do you grow a tree? This is a big one. I was just talking to Joe Magician about this, and he was kind of saying, you know, there's no seeds or anything in any of the published A Song of Ice and Fire pieces in the world of Ice and Fire, anything. There's nothing about seeds, nothing about how to grow a tree. And later on, I'm sure we'll get to Bran's visions. He sees some blood sacrificing, and there's a lot of blood sacrificing outlining in this chapter, obviously.
So much.
Yeah, many think this is the Jojen paste, but how do you grow a tree? I mean, the roots won't work well enough because they're spread out so far, and trees like that are usually in huge forests, and they end up just choking out all other species.
Jojen paste, though? Can we talk about that? Yeah. How does everyone feel?
Should we
explain that? Yeah, with everyone listening at home, it's a pretty crazy theory.
It's nuts. I mean, it starts off that Jojen, especially in this chapter, is weaker, and Mira is trying to nurse him, and Bran notes Jojen's weaker. And then later on in the chapter, Jojen isn't even present, and the children of the forest and Bloodraven feed him this paste made of weirwood saplings, and it has little bloody looking veins in it, and Bran thought it looked like blood and smelled like blood, and he tasted it, and at first it was kind of like bad, and then it became like better as he like drank it, and it's supposed to help his abilities. And this chapter is so outlined about like blood magic, and we know blood magic is real. I mean, look at Daenerys in A Game of Thrones with Miri Mazdur and with Khal Drogo. So we know blood magic is a thing, and Melisandre.
Right.
And
shadow babies.
Yep, real. Shadow babies. They're real. And Bran eats this paste, and people think Jojen is being cannibalized. The children of the forest, the singers, the Blood Raven, they're like making him feel better and distracting him. They make him his own weirwood throne in that scene, and they place him on it. Kind of weird. Like,
so crazy.
Sacrificey. Like, I'm just seeing it now, and I'm like, this is like some weird sacrificey, like, you're getting like carried and chanting is happening around you. And
yeah, by these people, the children of the forest, not the kind of that we've been fantasizing about. But, you know, like when you go to Oz and it might not be as beautiful as you thought, like when they turn to the left, they look a little creepier in that light. Ugh.
Old Nan's stories are all coming to life. You know, like all these stories they made fun of. She's coming. Her stories are happening to Bran. All the stories he grew up on are real. Where songs about knights and chivalry, as Sansa learns, aren't real. Bran learns all the songs about snarks and grumpkins, and, you know, they're real.
He even mentioned something about earlier on wishing that Rob could be there to see.
Yeah.
That he could see him fly because he didn't believe in any of those stories, and now he can do it. And, all these dreams he's having, he wishes that Rob could be there. I thought that was kind of a cool callback to the way they were all raised.
Absolutely.
Do you think that part of Bran's mission, when and if he ever breaks out of this, depending on which direction he goes, let's say he takes their agenda, and I guess it wouldn't matter even if he didn't, do you think part of it will be telling his siblings about all of these truths that he's learned about the world, just how deep the roots really go?
Absolutely. I do feel, not to like compare, but I mean, the show does kind of cover in a shorter span how Bran's emotions are. And I think he will be changed when he comes back. I mean, he's starting off, he's so sweet in this chapter. Can we just talk about what a sweetie
he really is?
He is.
He really is.
He's the purest boy. He's so sweet. He's always thinking
when it comes to Hodor, just a little bit, though.
That's the thing. It's like Bran is not always my favorite. And a lot of what he does and thinks really drives me crazy, but he did have so many sweet moments when he's like asking Mira and Jojen if they want to become greens, like if they can do this too and they can all do it together, and he what is he supposed to do when they're not here anymore, and he just has a lot of really kind kid-like thoughts while he's going through these very intense situations that remind you that he's, as we're saying, a 9-year-old boy.
And it's really sad because especially when the very beginning of the chapter, there's this line about the last green seer. Like, Bran is the last green seer. He's it on this planet. That's what Blood Raven tells him. And that's like, he's the last hope against hope for these dying children of the forest and for Blood Raven and against the others in their eyes. And he's just so sweet to Mira, and he doesn't get these. This is a bigger journey than him. This is the hero's journey. This is the last hero. It really is just like the last hero, like that quote we get about the last hero, that one by one, his friends died, his dog died, his horse died, his sword broke in the cold. You know, this is the last hero come again in Bran.
And he probably just ate his friend.
Yep, and he doesn't even know.
And he doesn't even know.
And
so are you buying the psychedelic properties of Jojen's blood?
Oh, because he's absolutely. A green seer?
I think yes.
I mean, and at the end, in the visions, I mean, these crazy ass visions come to him. These like huge weirwood
way
trip.
Crazier than before.
Yeah.
Way crazier.
And they say, oh, you're going to be more powerful now. You're going to be way more. And they show blood sacrifice in the visions. They show that people are sacrificing.
The sickle and the woman and holding him under the tree. Yep. Oh, geez.
That's the thing is, as Chloe, you were saying, there's just such a precedence for this kind of thing already. And every way that Jojen acts in this chapter, and we've known that he knows that he's not going to make it. He knows when he's going to die. And so I think that there's some discussion about whether or not he understands that this is it. And so that's why he's being all moody, because he doesn't want to tell everybody that he knows that this is actually the time, instead of, you know, when he's back home or whatever else. And it's just this really... It's really interesting to see Jojen in this chapter in this dark, vast, timeless, but we know that time is passing, space. And I feel really bad for him, because I think that you look at him as a character and kind of what he wanted to accomplish, and him bringing Bran and teaching him so many things and all this kind of stuff, to then have him just kind of disappear at the end. And you kind of feel for him, because if what we think happened does actually happen. I feel like that's kind of a difficult end to this burden that he's been caring. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, there's that line that Mira and Jojen like are arguing over in front of Bran, and Bran's like saying, you know, I'm scared or whatever. And Mira's like, no need to be scared. You know, I know you're scared. And Jojen says, he's not the one who needs to be afraid.
Yeah.
He was afraid because the children of the forest are going to come collect him when Bran's asleep and juice him into a bowl.
Yeah. And he knows.
Yeah.
So.
And it's something Bran wouldn't just understand. And he knows that this is the way it has to happen. It's a fixed point in his timeline. It's going to happen. And it has to for the last hero to get where he needs to go.
And then Bran... That lesson ends, and then he's taken back to his bed, and he kind of is trying really hard to stay awake because he can't wait to tell Mira and Jojen what just happened. And then, as we said, he drifts into these very intense visions, and so it's heartbreaking, and it's very. I just really, you know, you look at how much is in this chapter in terms of endgame questions and theories and kind of what happens next, and it's just written so beautifully into this very atmospheric passage of the moon, and you just feel this weight of, you can almost feel like how cold and damp it is down there, and getting lost in this timeless, it's described as the caves are vast, timeless, and silent, or something. I think I butchered that, but I just feel like you feel that pressingness as he's kind of drifting in and out of consciousness or not. And I just,
and he says, so he dreams and sleeps. He couldn't put together when he was real life and when he was dreaming anymore, when he was
attached. And he tells himself he has to wake up or he'll die, basically. Yep. Somewhere in the middle. So it's very, he went
from
creepy.
Wolf dreams to visions to alive all of a sudden again. And it's such a crazy discombobulated feeling.
And warging in and out of Hodor.
Yep.
Let us not forget. So
just so he can go with the rest of them. It's his first escape. Bran has been trapped in his body since Jaime pushed him out of that window. And it's his first time that he is out. He's flying. He's in the birds, in the burbs. He's, you know, burbs.
I hate that so much.
Which part?
When he says he's thinking to Hodor, I'm trying to find the...
Hodor was hiding.
Like, I just want to be strong again for a while. I'll give you back the way I always do. The big stable boy no longer fought him as he had the first time back in the lake tower during the storm. Like a dog who has had all the fight whipped out of him, Hodor would curl up and hide whenever Bran reached out for him.
Man, he doesn't know what he's doing.
He has to know what he's doing.
Okay, so he knows a little bit what he's doing.
He knows enough. He knows
he
enough.
Know better.
He chooses not to think about it. He's just not thinking about it. And he's going to have to think about what happened here with Jojen. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to really think about the people he's hanging out with, too. It's not like, I mean, I realized the road there was so bad, the struggle to get there. So it's a relief to be in some kind of place that is protecting from the elements that we put ourselves in the first place. But he's there now. And if Jojen's not there tomorrow, you know, what now?
Right. Well, and we've been talking and we always talk about good or bad, or black and white, or is Bran down a quote unquote good path? Is Arya going down a good path? Is the Bloodraven good or bad? And, you know, I, as we always say, nothing in the story can be characterized as black or white or good or bad. It's all very gray, but I just feel like there's a lot. And Bran, as we kind of talked about in season 7, and as we're at this point with him in the story, he could very easily slip and fall one way or the other, you know? And if he doesn't wield what he learns and this power that he's gaining and starting to understand, then it could be not the best.
Sansa sums that up in one of her chapters in, I want to say, the beginning in either the first Feast chapter for Sansa or second. I think it's Sansa 1, but she says, you know, I never asked to play the Game of Thrones, one false move, one slip, and I'm dead. And it really resonates for all of the kids if they even one bad move. And I mean, these are kids that haven't had real parental figures in their lives for a couple years now, you know, and they're in some of the most formative years of their lives with no parents, no real parent figure, you know, just trying to survive, you know, prisoners of war, you know, out in the road doing whatever they can to eat and survive in a weirwood, going through the tundra in a weirwood, like
hanging out with Sandor Clegane.
Sounds really
bad.
Think
of the language he uses. It's a rough time.
He's probably really smelly. I'm going to be honest. Like, now that I'm thinking about
everyone it, everyone smells in this book series.
He probably smells a lot. He's probably like super manly.
Yikes.
I bet Darkstar smells beautiful.
Yeah, like perfumed.
You know he does.
Gerald, like, whatever.
Blood oranges and vanilla and saffron.
Disdain in your voice, Gerald.
Gerald.
Okay, so I think it really depends what we're talking about. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it depends on which direction of the gray that Blood Raven is leaning toward the most, right?
Well, he said, "Darkness will be your cloak, your shield, your mother's milk. Darkness will make you strong."
Oof. I say starkness over darkness. Right?
That's a t-shirt.
But so what way do you think anyone is leaning?
Well, and that's the other thing is look at Blood Raven's past. He seems to be very remorseful of the things he's done, especially during like the Black Fires and during, I mean, all of it. He has that quote, you know, when Bran first gets that first vision after he eats supercharged Jojen paste. And he's like, "Oh, I just saw my dad. Can I talk to him?" And Blood Raven's like,
he's like, "You're going to see a lot of stuff, bud."
Like, buckle up, sunshine. Yeah.
He's like, "I live here. Look at me. This shit's crazy.
Look at me. I'm the tree now.
I'm the tree. It's growing into me. Here, just eat this. You'll be fine.
You'll be fine, kid. Eat this." Every time that's been said to me, I feel like that's a bad plan. Don't eat it.
But you eat it anyway, you know?
I don't. What are you doing? Blood Raven tells Bran, says, "You can't speak to him. Try as you might. I know I have my own ghosts, Bran, a brother I loved, a brother I hated, a woman I desired. Through the trees, I still see them, but no word of mine has ever reached them. The past remains the past. We can't learn from it, but we can change it."
Well, can we at this point, for those of you who haven't heard or read, Chloe, what you've written about Blood Raven and kind of what how he's been manipulating and how we can maybe see where he is or isn't manipulating the situation? Oh, yeah. Because for those of you who, which is none of you, I'm sure, don't quite understand the power that he wields over all of this, can you give us a summary or an overview of kind of what theories you've pulled together? Because it's very interesting.
Yeah.
Is the official title the Grey Mist Theory?
I don't know, I guess.
Because that needs to be a t-shirt too.
I mean, I guess I named it like 1,000 Eyes and One Grey Mist or something, but my favorite part of this theory was I had a title just sectioned, "I See a Grey Mist Rising." Which you can't not break out into credence when you hear that. You know what I mean?
Perfect.
We'll have to tweet it out or something so people can find it.
Absolutely. So Blood Raven was, you know, he's a legitimized great bastard of Aegon the Unworthy, which, funny, because we just talked about him in Arya's chapter, who one of his mistresses was the Black Pearl, pirate lady, and swashbuckling beautiful lady. But he is a legitimized bastard of Aegon IV and Missy Blackwood, which is interesting when you think about that because of the Blackwoods and Brackens and their feud and the big, beautiful weirwood tree that they have. But so he was a Targaryen loyalist during the Blackfyre rebellions, the hand of Aerys I and Maker I. He was in love with his sister. He hated his brother Bittersteel because Bittersteel was also in love with his sister. And he basically supported Daeryn II during, because he was the rightful lord during the Blackfyre rebellions instead of Daemon. And so he's just this really interesting character that he was born in 175 AC and we're at like 300 AC in this book. You know, he's old. He's old, 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 and he's fossilized into this tree. And during the books, if you pay attention, and this happens during like Melisandre's chapters with blood magic and with when Rattleshirt, when she has Mance cloaked as Rattleshirt through the bones, through the glamour, you'll notice there's gray mist that appears through the books. Ned, when he has his fever dream about the Tower of Joy, and it's gray wraiths draped in gray mists and everything.
On gray horses.
Yeah. Anytime you see gray mist, it's usually Bran or Blood Raven taking a peek.
Think about that, everyone, just so for a second.
Yeah.
She just quoted something from book one.
He's been around. I look at dreams.
My gosh.
It's not 100% confirmed always, but even Cersei has weird dreams at one point.
That's what's been interesting. Yeah, that was the piece that was so interesting to me because, like you said, is 100% confirmed with every situation. I don't think anyone would say that. But
no.
To have the gray mist with Cersei is just very, very interesting to me.
Like, he can see. He has eyes all over the realm. And anywhere that there's a Weirwood, another thing is anytime you have a scene where there's a Weirwood, you should expect that Bloodraven and Bran are probably able to see that. And that is now available in the Weirwood net. Like, NSA style, it's watching them, you know? They can watch anywhere. In the Theon chapter, the chapter where Jaime and Ramsay get married, Faegarya and Ramsay get married, when Theon goes to the Godswood, he hears something coming from the tree, and there's drapes, just mist, just draped around the tree.
It's gray.
Yep, gray mist.
It's so interesting.
And like you said in this article on Reddit that we'll link everyone in the show notes, there's mist that happens throughout the series. You're not specifically going out and saying, oh, mist, so this must be it. You're actually going deeper and looking for the description of gray being involved, and you're finding a pattern within that.
Yeah, even in Bloodraven's first real entrance, in the Mystery Night in the Duncan Egg novellas, in the Mystery Night, they say a gray mist came down on White Walls, and then there's Bloodraven the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting that when you just pay attention to those little details, you start seeing that.
So is this them peeking in on the situation for reference, or them manipulating the situation for their own cause?
Good question.
And that's like, I feel like it could be, I think fever dreams are something that can be manipulated more.
Mm-hmm.
But live action moments. So like Ned having that fever dream, it wouldn't surprise me if Bloodraven was part of the machinations of that, and he kind of fed that dream to Ned.
Right.
Especially someone like Ned, who is so connected to the Weirwood, who prayed at the Weirwood. We see in this chapter, this Bran chapter, Ned praying to the Weirwood. That's something that's, he's very wholly religious with the old gods. So I wouldn't say they're messing with things in real life when there's gray mist as much. But there are certain magics, like I said with Melisandre, that you notice there's gray mist there. So I just wonder if there's a connection with that magic. There has to be more connection, deeper. But gray mist appears when they utilize Weirwood power.
I think so.
What do you think the connection is?
I think it's just what appears when certain mystical things are used. Like, so Melisandre uses a glamour, and she has to use bones to do that. She uses the Rattleshirt bones to create that glamour and to cover Mance. And when they utilize the Weirwoods and they go and look at stuff, they usually are using blood magic. I mean, the tree is pumping through Bloodraven. It's almost like a parasite, you know, it's pumping through the children of the forest.
Ah, yes.
The trees are a parasite. They right. grow and they exist off of blood. That's how they stay powerful.
Right. Yeah.
No matter what, who is wielding the power, whether it's someone like Melisandre or Bloodraven or whoever else is using blood, that's like the thing that it all kind of comes back to.
Blood magic.
Where do you believe Euron Greyjoy falls in line here? I was looking at the map today trying to come up with a cool nickname, and I was looking at the way, I was like, well, you don't have to go through the Jade Gates. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to go through the Jade Gates to head toward Ulthos. There's a way past that. You can go toward the Green Hell if you're feeling froggy. Maybe that's the way Euron Greyjoy went. Maybe he met some important people, and maybe he learned some important things. But we're talking about a guy that is living in the Weirwood tree, and he's getting leached into it. And I don't know what you think about the possibility of there being a connection with those people. I don't really know what I'm getting at. I'm just kind of wondering how much
is.
There's
a very popular theory that has kind of come up, and if you've Euron has that speech, I want to say it's in Dance, where he says, it's definitely in Dance, I'm pretty sure, it might be in Feast. I like to read them together, so who knows?
I think it's in the Reaver, if it's the one I think.
It's Reaver, but he says, when I was a kid, I dreamt I could fly, and then I woke up and I couldn't. And a lot of people do theorize, and I subscribe to it, that Bloodraven tried to choose him as a Greenseer, but they put him back on the shelf right away. They're like, nah, this guy crazy.
Wow.
And it opened his eye, but he couldn't fully utilize that power like Bran gets to. He didn't get the training, so kind of like Kylo Ren style, you know, like he went bad instead because the Force drove him crazy and he didn't get to train in a cave with Jedis.
Do you think that he went kind of in the opposite direction, almost even by the seasons, and went toward this lush southern
equator area of Westeros, I mean, of Planetos that we don't really understand. And maybe he went through his own sort of Jedi training.
Yeah, and he's, like, I think he representing took his own trip. He took, you know, a year off after college and sailed to
and explored himself.
So he found some, like, crazy Ashai psychedelics. He wasn't sucking on that Jojen paste.
No. Well, and that's the thing is, so think of it that way. He drinks Shade of the Evening, which everyone is like, whoa, that's crazy LSD crap in these kingdoms, you guys. That is some LSD. Like, that opens your mind. The government does, Westeros' government doesn't want you to do Shade of the Evening. But he goes and does this drug, and that keeps his mind open. So it's almost like he's doing that to connect into this mystical force that we have of, like, Melisandre and her shadow binding.
Because he saw some, and he's like, I want more now.
Yes, absolutely. He had that taste of the green seer life.
And it's interesting because we get a little bit in that, and Bran, as he's falling in whatever, either the first time he does that, he sees other people, like, on the ground when he's been told to fly, like people who didn't make it. And I don't know if whatever his name is that I forgot.
it could be a lot of people right now. Oh, there we go.
It took me through. I don't know if you're on, like, one great, of those sweetheart. People that maybe Bran saw, but just this idea that there's other people who've been tapped who haven't succeeded or been successful, and whether or not those people have gone to the links that someone like Euron has to try to stay as close to it as possible, or kind of what still lingers. I think it's all very interesting in the way that that all kind of connects, and how everything is being manipulated by this power that this you don't even really understand until you get to the end of A Dance of Dragons.
Right. I agree.
Was there gray mist in the scene where Bran fell pushed from the tower?
In his dream, right afterward, there is.
God, could you imagine if there was gray mist around Cersei and Jaime?
Ew.
And he was compelled to push Bran instead of doing it on his own. I knew Jaime was good.
Oh my God, he is not a redemption arc yet. Get over it. He hasn't admitted his wrongs yet, Zach.
I'm working on it.
I know you're working on it for him, but I think George has to work on it, not you.
You're right.
It's not going to happen. Not yet.
So what now? What's he going to do with all this power, if it's him or if it's just, I mean, how do you, much autonomy do you think Brendan has in all of this, Brendan being Bloodraven?
I think that he knows he's at the end. I honestly think that's one thing I think.
Can he not
the
see
show kind of gleaned to us? Oh, I think he knows he is, though, because he tells Bran, you're the last green seer, like, you're the only hope. So, I mean, they've been searching for the one.
This is Euron, the end wasn't of the cycle. Gonna do it.
Yeah, I mean, they've been searching, and Bran is the one. This Brandon Stark of Winterfell with this connection to the old gods.
This kid, man, with Hodor and company, just he's a ragtag bunch of dudes.
The last hero, dude. He's the last hero.
That's so annoying.
Right?
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, and you're saying what next, but I'm thinking, like, in terms of my life, like, well, what do we do now? Like, as you sit here and think about this a lot, it's like, well, then what next?
Yeah.
What do we do after we know what we're supposed to be thinking about?
Bran's going to wrestle with the morality of what they're up to, right?
I think that's what's going to make him leave the tree. I think he will realize what's going on. Like, I think probably something similar to show with how the cave got, you know, interrupted by whites finally, like, can break through. Bloodraven knows he's on the way out. I'm sure, just like Jojen, he knows when he's going to die. Mm-hmm. He can see everything. And I think Bran's going to see what's really going on and see, like, oh, they're blood sacrificing people for this power. And, like, they want me to help kill the others, but they don't want it for the reasons, like, of saving the kingdom. They want it for saving their kind and their power. And I think that's going to be really important for why he returns home to his family, at least at some point.
Do you think that him finding out about Jojen would maybe be a catalyst for that?
I think he might be, much like how Sansa is just waiting to find out the right information about Ned and Jane and et cetera before she flips on Littlefinger. I think Bran is the same thing. I think he's waiting to find out how his friend died and what their motives truly are. Because, I mean, we really don't know their motives, but there's a sinister, like, an overarching sinister ambiance to this chapter. Like, especially whenever the children talk, like, it's a little sinister.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think it's a byproduct of the nature of the surroundings? And maybe that's kind of a red herring, and that this, maybe they're just as neutral as everyone else. And, like you said, they're just trying to save their kind.
I don't think so, because, I mean, yes, I guess in the end, yeah, it's another gray morality thing, because then you look at it self-preservation, and isn't every race just trying to do that? But to what point where you wage wars to kill them out? And well,
maybe that's what happens, like the way it was adapted in the TV show, where maybe like Leaf, maybe that was a miniature version of the children. Let's say they get ran over, and that Blood Raven has to face the Night King or whatever amalgamation it actually is. And the children have to maybe collectively make a decision to go, well, we'll let Brandon Stark run and we'll help him survive. And maybe he'll save those people, because it looks like if we don't do it, everyone's done. And maybe that's like poetically the old finally giving away with a long death rattle to the new.
That might, honestly, and hey, that's a huge blood sacrifice. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And then all the Grumpkins and Snarks come up down from the caverns to help as well. And they're like, we'll help too.
They're all cheering. And
old Anne comes back from the grave and she's like, told you guys.
Then she's like in the grave and she's like, still secretly banging Dunk. So going back to the grave. Bye. In the afterlife.
And then Hodor holds the door.
Ah, get out. You're fired. Right? Again, this is the second time in the podcast I've fired
but
you.
You've had to fire him. It's been a rough go.
It's been a rough go.
I'm still employed. That's what I'm saying.
Well, this is fun. I feel like we could do this for another 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, like 80.
This is fun. And for everybody, I just can't emphasize enough, everybody listening at home, go just fall down the rabbit hole of all of these theories, because
there's so much.
There's so much. And I feel like, I know we say this about every chapter, but we didn't even dive into like his last visions and what all those things may or may not mean, or all this stuff. I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot. And so we have a lot of time.
Talk about it amongst your friends.
Yeah.
There's a lot to discover. And as you've noticed, like, new, it's just, we're so in the middle of everything. These long form conversations we're having with each other, if we all care about it this much, we can kind of just sort of come up with new ideas together. And who knows? Until the new book comes out and tells us that we're wrong,
it's
we
all
can
fair game. Kind
of have fun with it. Yeah. It just,
there
it's all
are
fair
so
game.
Many theories too. Every day, more people are writing new theories and new ways to analyze this text. And I find that so interesting. These books keep giving, even in this long night, so to speak. In the long, cold night we're in right now, this drought until we get the next book. And some people complain, you know, they get a little, oh, like, we're running out of things to talk about. But I honestly see new theories every week from people in the fandom that I find interesting.
Right, new good theories.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I agree. Well, should we I don't know how we go back to the Cat of the Canals chapter after that.
Yeah.
But should we give our favorite moments?
Cat of the Canal chapter owned to the courtesans and to their barge culture and to Braavos. Just seems like a really cool place. If you've got your wits about you and you can handle your shit, it looks like you could have a pretty fun time in Braavos.
You should cosplay one of those.
As a Braavo.
With their crazy outfit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it would be really fun.
Talk like Cyril Ferrell the whole time. That would be awesome.
Own to Arya, because when dudes harass her, like sexually harass her and just harass her, she flips them off and calls them a camel's cunt.
Yeah.
And, like, takes it in stride. And she's just this little, like, man child.
She's awesome. She has that finger knife.
Pickpocketing people.
Just doing her thing.
Spinning it before they can notice it was gone.
Love it.
Yeah.
My own is going to be how she would have cats that would always follow her around. And it says some days she would have a dozen trailing her before the sun went down. So just imagine
like,
her.
Hit me.
I know. First of all, I love cats. Thank you.
I can relate.
Second of all, yeah, that's my dream life. But third of all, it's just such a funny picture to have her walking around these streets, doing all these crazy things and having all these crazy conversations while also having a ton of cats just following around. So.
And for the final Brand chapter, we're giving Owens for the final. Oh, yeah. I just, no way to set it up. It's kind of a bummer, but we've reached this hill.
I have like 80 Owens for this chapter.
Oh, good.
Go for it.
First off, Own to the Abyss, because it is black as pitch and swallowing things. Good for it.
Mm.
That's dark.
Thanks, yeah.
I want to give my own to Bran when he wargs into the Raven. And first of all, we didn't talk about this conversation of young or old. These birds have all been ridden, and kind of feeling the presence of somebody else inside, I thought was interesting and wild. But my own specifically goes to Bran's first flight when he is learning to fly as a raven for the first time. And it says his first flight ended when he crashed into a wall and ended back inside his own broken body. And it's kind of sad, but it's just kind
of like a
funny,
video game,
right? To imagine him trying his hardest and then immediately slamming into a wall. And it just was kind of with like feathers flying everywhere and a whole kind of thing. So Ontu Brand is trying his best.
Aw, same.
Ontu, the children of the forest, for using Jojen when I feel like they could have just used, and quote, under the hill, they still had food to eat. 100 kinds of mushrooms grew down here.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe there's a nod on George R. R. Martin's behalf, but it was kind of awesome. So just owns. That's hilarious.
You have to wonder, like, George, what were you doing when you wrote this chapter? I think we all get it, but...
Yeah, the parallels are hilarious. And then he goes on to say, blind white fish swam in the Black River, but they tasted just as good as fish with eyes once you cook them up. We can do another Chloe own.
Yeah, my favorite own is probably... Let's just take a moment to give the biggest of owns to Mira goddang Reed for taking care of these two dang man children and Hodor across the frozen tundra, watching her tears freeze in front of her, dealing with creepy ass wood sprites and chilling while her brother dies. That is not how I want to spend my sweet 16, is what I'm saying. So no. Owned Mira Reed for being Mira
owned
Reed.
Owned Mira Reed.
Ashara Dane's daughter. What?
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 Those are our owns, and now it's time to read yours.
Masterful. Our first own, Jill Kate, with a crown emoji, unicorn emoji, and sword emoji in their username. Own to Taganaro for defending Cat's honor with a smack of a codfish on Quill's face. Fish and cat emoji.
Yes.
Yes, we're reading off the emojis, Eliana. Why not?
Next, we have Darren Soward's very stable genius on Twitter, who says, own to Brand for being able to dissociate across bodies and time. Hashtag jealous AF. Darren wants to warg into Hodor. That's fine. And then next,
I get it.
Own to Darian for being Arya's subject in her He Had It Come and skit. Hashtag he ran into my needle. Hashtag 9 times.
So good.
And then own to Lyanna Stark for retroactively reminding everyone who run the world.
Jerry and Lois at UNLAOISED. Bran owned to Jojen for teaching Bran the value of reading. A reader lives 1,000 lives before he dies, said Jojen. The man who never reads lives only one. It's all very well for Bran watching videos on YouTube, YEW-tube, but nothing beats a good book. Hashtag see what I did there? Mark, smiley face emoji.
Reading rocks. It's my favorite.
Absolutely. Arya owned to him of many faces. All men must bow to him in the end, no matter if they worship the Seven or the Lord of Light, the Moon Mother or the Drowned God or the Great Shepherd. All mankind belongs to him. Hashtag literally owns everybody.
From Rune Fjar on Twitter. Bran owned to Summer for casually eating undead snow bears for supper. And the Canal Cat own. It sounds cooler that way almost. Canal Cat, it's a punk rock band. Owned to the sheer number of subtle clues and interconnections. George, you crafty bastard. With tinfoil hat on, I predict that after Mission Winterfell, Mr. Mance will put on a dead man's good boots and sing his way into the Sea Lord's Palace to steal a lemon. Maybe. Maybe.
Whoa.
Glamours. Don't forget about the finger bones.
Gray mist.
Next, we have at Nefesta_W on Twitter, who says, my own to Arya for sticking to her roots and keeping to the old way. For Darian, she passed the sentence and swung the sword. Hashtag Ned's girl. And for Bran's chapter, my own goes to Old Nan because all of her stories are coming true. Old Nan remembers. Hashtag the North remembers.
Yes. Our next two come from Heathen_King on Twitter. Bran 3 owned to just a gorgeous, wonderfully written chapter full of wonder, horror, and sadness. Everyone resigned to their fate except maybe Mira, who keeps hope alive. The old gods demand blood and bones become branches. Oh, that was good. That was real beautiful. Another from Heathen King. For Cat of the Canals, Arya owned Darren, who truly earned his execution as a deserter of the Night's Watch. That guy was a chud. True.
From Real Kafefi. At Clint wrote this, own to all the questions I have after reading Bran 3. Talking ravens in the good old days. Jojen paste is a vomit face emoji. Enthroned children of the forest. Blood raven, ! Trees that don't forget, shocked face. Seeing beyond trees, ? And finally, I think this is a head scratcher for all of us. Time travel, Ned, Lyanna, a vengeful mother, dunk. Blood sacrifices, JSKD, KS, question. Yeah.
Yeah. We've all been there.
Same.
That's a Clint. Good summary.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, we have at Beauty Brienne, who says, the fact that Arya and Bran are thousands of miles from home and still get tailored educational sessions gets my own. And then she had a really great GIF of The More You Know with a star.
Beautiful.
So those are our owns. Those are your owns. And if you want to send in your owns for these chapters, your theories, your thoughts, or if you want to send in your owns for whatever else, you can find us on Twitter at Game of Owns or on Facebook by searching for Game of Owns, or you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com.
Next up, we have Tyrion 8 and Jaime 5, so no pressure. Just the Lannister boys back continues. At it again. And I think you should all feel free to engage Chloe on Twitter, because this is where she reigns supreme. You know what I'm saying? So everything you've heard today, if you have any questions, I'm going to just speak for Chloe right now and say, go ahead and tweet at her with your thoughts about the Grey Mist, because I think we all need answers and we don't have enough time or bandwidth to get it out, I think, in the best way on this podcast. And you guys probably have so many better questions after being able to listen to this or something. So
Chloe, can you give us all your handles again?
Absolutely. Thanks so much, you guys. This was so fun to be on. You can definitely find me online. You can find me at Drunk ASOIAF on Twitter. It's Drunk ASOIAF History on YouTube and Podbean. We'll be on iTunes soon. We've been doing a Drunken Egg series, and Zach actually said he would be joining me on the mystery night. Yes, Drunken Egg. It's where we drink and go through the whole book. It's really fun. I'm writing on Tumblr at liesinarbor.tumblr.com. I'm working on an Ashara Dane series currently, in particular. And you can also tweet at me at liesinarbor. And Eliana, who was on last episode, Melisandre episode, and I are starting a project soon together, and we're going to be announcing that soon. So this is a little unofficial announcement.
So cool.
Yeah.
That's so exciting. Everyone's coming together and making really fun stuff.
Absolutely. It's going to be a really good 2018 content year, I feel like.
And you're doing a lot of work for the convention in Ohio this summer. Not this summer. This spring. It's soon.
Yeah.
Ice and FireCon this spring.
I'm so excited. I know you guys are coming or hanging out, hopefully.
On stick horses and pool noodles.
Yeah, stick horses and pool noodles. I'm marketing director for Ice and FireCon. We're in Ohio this year out of Deer Creek. It's beautiful. It's a smaller event, intimate, but it's a really fun event for book and show fans alike. We have a lot of cool events. We have wolves this year, you guys.
Oh, we have
wolves coming. So, yeah, we have an actual wolf.
Is there going to be a dog park for the dogs and the wolves? That would be fun.
I don't think that's
how
it works.
That would be a bad idea.
I'm really excited for that. That's going to be a blast.
Yeah, it's going to be so much fun. I can't wait to see you.
I know. It's going to be so fun. Everyone's going to be together.
It's been so long. Everyone's going to be together. The whole gang. There's so many. History of Westeros, Emmett Booth, Poor Quentin.
No big deal.
Butterfly. A bunch of people that are fun are coming. So the whole fandom gets together. It's like a backyard barbecue and medieval summer camp for everyone, you know?
What kind of tricks do you have up your sleeve?
Tricks.
Like, for example, like, when is the episode with Ashaya going to air?
Well, I'm getting some new technology upgrades in the next couple weeks, so I've kind of been putting it off. But I think that the Drunk A Song of Ice and Fire History episode we recorded this summer, we recorded a little teaser for you. We recorded Nymeria's Landing, Shea and I did. And I think that's going to come out in the next month or two. I'm hoping to put it out by Ice and FireCon, depending on what the situation is in my technology. But I have it almost finished, so.
Tweet at Chloe and tell her to hurry. Words of encouragement.
Oh, that's going to help.
it always works in this fandom.
4 more years, not putting it out.
Thank you so much. This was such a treat. Anna and I were really excited / intimidated, and you made it so easy for us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course. We hope we can have you again soon.
Yes, I had a blast.
Grey Mist.
Grey Mist.
Look it up.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.